history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that are pretty incredible, stories that you ought to hear, but you're never going to unless we take a little time to ask some questions and listen to what comes back our way. Today I'm in Tulare, California, which is where our guest today was born and where he lives now, about to celebrate birthday number 94. Del Blomquist, Navy veteran of World War II and the Korean War, our guest today. Del, tell me about growing up here in Tulare. What kind of place was this in the 20s and 30s?
I thought it was a wonderful place to live, and I thoroughly enjoyed all of it. And one thing I can say about Tulare Union High School, I did not know there was a race problem when I was going to school. I went to school with every kind of race you can think of, and we all had fun. No problem.
And you were an only child, so I bet you had a lot of time to figure out some things to do with yourself. What'd you do to keep busy or stay occupied?
I thoroughly enjoyed building model airplanes. I built model airplanes. We called them gas model free flights. We would build them and tinker with the engine and then launch them, and sometimes they would crash and sometimes they wouldn't. But I became intensely interested in aircraft at that time, and it carried on through my life.
Well, yeah, even just here in the last couple of years, and we'll talk about that. I'm curious, though, what was it that piqued that interest? Was it hearing about Charles Lindbergh? Was it other stories of aviators? What made you want to fly those gas-powered models?
Well, all of the things you said is true. I was immensely interested in Lindbergh and famous pilots. I helped form the Tulare Sky Kings here with a group of my buddies that I joined up, and we all built model airplanes and went to contests and all that, and we formed the Tulare Sky Kings here in Tulare when I was building model airplanes.
Was there one particular model that you were most proud of or that went the fastest or you have the best story about?
There was one model called a Zipper. It was a good free flight airplane. And the object of this build of these models was we'd go to contest. The guy that could model would stay up the longest was the winner. It was a very competitive free flight gas model called a Zipper. And I built a couple of those. And of course, I crashed a lot of them. So there's always a smell of glue and dope in my house.
And when you say dope, you're not talking about the stuff they smoke.
No.
You're talking about the stuff you put the bodies together with.
I'm talking about the stuff that you spread on the covering to tighten it up.
These days, you just got to clarify. So Tulare, California, in the 20s and 30s, coming up on 1940, you're in high school. I guess you had a paper route, too. Is that right?
Yeah. I had a paper route every afternoon when I was about 11 or 12 years old. It was 7 miles long out to the south end of town, which was called Tuggleville at the time, but people don't know what Tuggleville is nowadays. But I had 103 papers and would ride from North K Street all the way out of south of town and back into town and deliver all those papers overnight every afternoon.
Well, and I'm just wondering, the thought hit me maybe because when I was driving into Tulare this morning, I hit a little bit of fog. Did you ever have some fog problems on your paper route?
Not on my paper route, but later in life when I was working over at NAS Lemoore, I used to go to the base out the back road called Grainesville Boulevard, and I had to cross Highway 41. In those days, it was a two-lane busy road. When the fog was really bad, I could only see one telephone pole sticking up. If they could see two, it wasn't too bad. But when I got into the one-pole situation, I would come up to 41, and I'd stop, and I was driving a Volkswagen Beetle. I would turn the engine off, turn the radio off, and roll down the windows. And if I didn't hear anything coming, I'd crank it up and get across 41 right away. Yeah, that's the worst fog I ever saw.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but you seem to remember a lot, so maybe you do. When you were a teenager, when you started going to Tulare Union High School, did you have some thoughts of, hey, when I grow up, here are the things that Del Blomquist is going to accomplish and do?
Oh, yes. I made a solid promise to myself if I ever flew anything, I was going to fly a glider. You know, flying these models and watch them in the air. And they was, one day I was watching one come down, and it caught a thermal and went back up. And I said, if I ever fly anything, I'm flying a glider. I finally made that come true, and I owned a glider for 40 years and had so much fun flying it. It's unbelievable. Can't describe it, how much fun and what wonderful people I met, other pilots and their families and everything. It was a wonderful part of my life.
How old were you the last time you flew that glider?
I was about 90. Yeah, I just sold it about 3 years ago.
Well, and in World War II, the Navy didn't have you flying, but you didn't know there was going to be a World War II when you were going to school. You weren't quite 17 years old when Pearl Harbor happened. Do you remember that day, what it was like here in Tulare?
Absolutely. I and about four or five of my high school buddies had a flatbed truck, a steak truck, and a little pickup, and we went up in the mountains that morning to get a lot of fir tree limbs, boughs, to bring them back and decorate the gym for the junior-senior prom. And we all stopped for lunch, turned on the radio, and this guy says, the Japanese have just bombed Pearl Harbor. And they had to clarify whether this was an Orson Welles thing or not. And they kept saying, this is not Orson Welles, this is true. Mm-hmm. So.
And for people who don't get the reference with Orson Welles, a lot of young people listening, you had lived through that too. Orson Welles puts on this big radio drama, The War of the Worlds, where the aliens are invading, right?
Yeah, Orson Welles put on some real good stories. That's why they had to clarify on Pearl Harbor Day that it was not an Orson Welles story. This is true. So we all came back from that venture up in the mountains and said to each other, well, I guess we're not going to have any problem finding a job when we get out of high school. And that's the way it was. We just couldn't believe that the Japanese would do that, but neither could anybody else.
Well, and I've talked to a lot of veterans who grew up around this area, the San Joaquin Valley, and they had classmates who were Japanese Americans. And absolutely, they saw things change after that. Was that your experience too?
Absolutely. I had some of the most wonderful events with Dorothy Ichinaga. And her mother and father ran the restaurant here in Tulare. It was excellent food. And before Dorothy got her diploma, they had come and taken her and her family away. And it was just an awful thing, you know. Dorothy was just a wonderful friend, and the whole family were great Japanese people. But they were caught. But Dorothy came back, and she's passed away now. But, yeah, good friends.
Well, how did you see life changing in Tulare after that news, after that big development, after America, you know, a day later, was officially at war?
Well, the only thing I can remember is that the war became the real point of living, I guess you want to call it, here in this town and all other towns. That's one thing that really brought people together, was the war. And that's probably the last time that happened anyway since World War II. But I want to say one thing else about Dorothy Ichinaga. We had a Class 42 reunion, and two of the young ladies in the class went to the high school and got Dorothy's diploma and presented it to her at the 50th reunion. That was emotional thing, you know. She didn't get it because they'd taken them away before the for graduation, but these girls went and got that diploma for her and gave it to her.
So the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor, America's at war, and you said you and your buddies figured out you're all going to have jobs. Is that you saying, hey, I'm going to be in the service at some point?
I knew that that was probably going to happen. Being my age, and when I graduated from high school, 17, I had a little time to figure out what I wanted to do. So I said, I want to fly a P-38, which is, I think, one of the finest fighters built during World War II. So I made plans. I went to Fresno. I got a place to live, a room and board, and I got a job running an elevator at the Matty Building. And I was all ready to go to Fresno State and get as much education as possible so that when I got drafted or whatever, joined the service, I would have enough education to fly a P-38. Well, 5 days before I was going to turn 18, the headlines in the Fresno Bee were about 6 inches high, no more enlistments. So I said, well, that's that's not good. So I immediately went down to the Navy career recruiter and got the paperwork and came home and had Dad sign for me, and I joined the Navy just before I turned 18.
Well, and there are plenty of guys who flew in the Navy, too. Were you hoping that you'd be able to be a Navy pilot?
I tried to become a Navy mechanic, really, at the time. When I got out of boot camp and got assigned to the ship USS Ganymede, a cargo ship, I went straight to the yeoman in the yeoman's office and says, I want to transfer to an aircraft carrier. I want to be in a mech. I want to fly in the back seat of an SBD. He said, Seaman Blomquist, forget it. You are going to be on this tub until it finishes the war, or you're going to get transferred after you make petty officer's rate, back to new construction. Well, that never happened, so I spent 28 months on this Navy cargo ship.
Well, I want to hear about those 28 months, but a couple questions come to mind. I want to hear about boot camp, because I'm sure that was a memorable experience. But also, you wanted to be in the back seat of an SBD? I mean, you don't even see where you're going if you're in the back seat. You're facing backwards and people are shooting at you.
I just wanted to fly, and that was, I thought, the easiest way at the time to get into an airplane was to become a Navy mech and fly in the back seat of an SBD. But it didn't happen, and probably all of the things that I volunteered to do during World War II, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, and don't they tell you never to volunteer for anything in the service?
That's what they tell you, but sometimes it doesn't make any difference. Usually, if you volunteer, they still send you where they need you.
Well, and I don't want to gloss over boot camp, because you come from here in the San Joaquin Valley in Tulare, California, and they send you to Farragut, Idaho, where I think it's a little colder than Tulare, California. What was that boot camp like?
Well, it was, like you say, a little colder, and 10 below zero is cold. When I joined the Navy, the first thing they did was send us up to the Federal Building in San Francisco for tests and, medical tests and mental tests and orientation about the Navy. Well, one day we're kind of finished. We're sitting down in a basement passageway. A gang, all from the San Joaquin Valley area. The second-class petty officer came in, who we thought was God himself. He says, he gave us about a 30-second orientation on the Navy, and he says, all of you guys that want to go to San Diego for a boot camp, one step forward now. So the whole group leaped 1 foot and one step forward, and he says, get back in line. You're all going to Farragut, Idaho. So I arrived in Farragut, Idaho, right after my 18th birthday with a tweed suit and a raincoat, and it was snowing like heck. And yes, 10 below zero was not uncommon out there marching around and standing watch around the wash rack and all that stuff. So I got through it, though. Only got pneumonia once.
Only once. Well, maybe that was one of them. I was going to ask, were there moments where you're sitting there in Farragut, Idaho, and it's that cold and you're miserable, and you say, why did I join the Navy? What was I thinking?
No, I never gave that a thought. I knew why I was in the Navy, and that's where I wanted to be. If I can't get it in the P-38, the Navy's second. I had some experience working with the Navy before, so I knew what I was doing.
What was that experience?
My dad went to work at Mare Island in 1941, and I spent my junior year in high school in the Vallejo High School. And right across the bay there is the Mare Island Navy Shipyard. So while I was a junior in high school, I got a job over at Mare Island setting pins in a bowling alley. So I used to leave the high school when it was out and jump on my bike and ride across the bridge to Mare Island. And I became interested in what was going on over at Mare Island, when they had all these places where they were building submarines and all kinds of ships. And I would stop and see how things were going every time I go over there, and I got to know some sailors and so on and so forth. So that was why the second choice was Navy.
Well, I'm glad we added that detail, and I guess the question that comes to mind there is, did that plant any seeds in your mind that war might be imminent?
It was getting close. But I never thought that we would be attacked. But the way things were going in Europe and around, the thought was there that we might be in some kind of war.
Back to boot camp, were there some memorable things that happened there that you look back on and say, you know, that was really good I went through that, or that helped me grow, or I could have done without that, maybe?
No, boot camp was, to me, wasn't what I would call terrible. We had a chief who was a specialist that was our commander, company commander. In those days, they were getting coaches from colleges and universities and taking them in and making them chief specialists. They were chief petty officers, specialists, and they were the guys that were the commanding officer of the boot camp that I was in. Working with, his name was Chief Rodman, and he was a good person. None of this screaming and hollering in your ears or anything like that, just a really good person. And he ran our company very well, I thought. And they found out that I was a marching band in Tulare U High School for 4 years, that I was in the marching band, and they made me the second platoon leader. So I was one of the guys that got to say, hip right, hip right, hip right.
And were you playing your trumpet there too?
I was practicing it, but I wasn't playing in any Navy band.
But he does still play in the Tulare Community Band in Tulare, California, where he grew up and where he moved back to a decade ago after his wife passed away. It's time for our first break, but much more from Del Blomquist when we come back, including the impact that a close call and some tense, seemingly helpless moments aboard his cargo ship in the Pacific had on his outlook. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.